Verse 2. The proper use of wealth. The Blessed One addressed the householder, Anathapindika. With the wealth acquired by energetic striving, amassed by the strength of his arms, earned by the sweat of his brow, righteous wealth righteously gained, the noble disciple undertakes four worthy deeds. What for? With the wealth thus gained, he makes himself happy and pleased and properly maintains himself in happiness. He makes his parents happy and pleased and properly maintains them in happiness. He makes his wife and children, his slaves, workers, and servants happy and pleased and properly maintains them in happiness. He makes his friends and colleagues happy and pleased and properly maintains them in happiness. This is the first case of wealth gone to good use, fruitfully applied and used for a worthy cause. Further, householder, with the wealth thus gained, the noble disciple makes provisions against the losses that might arise on account of fire and floods, kings and bandits and unloved heirs. He makes himself secure against them. This is the second cause of wealth gone to good use. Further, householder, with the wealth thus gained, the noble disciple makes the five kinds of offerings to relatives, guests, ancestors, the king, and the devas. This is the third case of wealth gone to good use. Further, householder, with the wealth thus gained, the noble disciple establishes a lofty offering of alms to those ascetics and Brahmins who refrain from vanity and negligence, who are settled in patience and gentleness, who are devoted to taming themselves, to calming themselves, and to attaining nibbana. An offering that is heavenly, resulting in happiness, conducive to heaven. This is the fourth case of wealth gone to good use, fruitfully employed and used for a worthy cause. These, householder, are the four worthy deeds that the noble disciple undertakes with the wealth acquired by energetic striving, amassed by the strength of his arms, earned by the sweat of his brow, righteous wealth righteously gained. For anyone whose wealth is expended on other things apart from these four worthy deeds, that wealth is said to have gone to waste, to have been squandered and used frivolously. But for anyone whose wealth is expended on these four worthy deeds, that wealth is said to have gone to good use, to have been fruitfully employed and used for a worthy cause. Anguttara Nikaya 4:61, 2:65-68. Verse 3. A Family Man's Happiness. The Blessed One said to the householder, Anathapindika, "There are, householder, these four kinds of happiness, which may be achieved by a lay person who enjoys sensual pleasures, depending on time and occasion. What for? The happiness of possession, the happiness of enjoyment, the happiness of freedom from debt, and the happiness of blamelessness. And what, householder, is the happiness of possession? Here a family man possesses wealth acquired by energetic striving, amassed by the strength of his arms, earned by the sweat of his brow, righteous wealth righteously gained. When he thinks, I possess wealth acquired by energetic striving, righteously gained, he experiences happiness and joy. This is called the happiness of possession. And what, householder, is the happiness of enjoyment? Here, with the wealth acquired by energetic striving, amassed by the strength of his arms, earned by the sweat of his brow, righteous wealth righteously gained, a family man enjoys his wealth and does meritorious deeds. When he thinks, with the wealth acquired by energetic striving, righteously gained, I enjoy my wealth and do meritorious deeds, he experiences happiness and joy. This is called the happiness of enjoyment. And what, householder, is the happiness of freedom from debt? Here a family man is not indebted to anyone to any degree, whether small or great. When he thinks, I am not indebted to anyone to any degree, whether small or great, he experiences happiness and joy. This is called the happiness of freedom from debt. And what, householder, is the happiness of blamelessness? Here, householder, a noble disciple is endowed with blameless conduct of body, speech, and mind. When he thinks, I am endowed with blameless conduct of body, speech, and mind, He experiences happiness and joy. This is called the happiness of blamelessness. These, householder, are the four kinds of happiness that a layperson who enjoys sensual pleasures may achieve, depending on time and occasion. Anguttara Nikaya 4:62. 2. 69-70. Part 5. The Woman of the Home. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Savatthi, in the Eastern Park, in the mansion of Migara's mother. Then Visakha, Migara's mother, approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, and sat down to one side. The Blessed One then said to her, "Visakha, when a woman possesses four qualities, she is heading for victory in the present world and is successful in this world. What for?" "Here, Visakha, a woman is capable at her work. She manages her domestic help. She behaves in a way that is agreeable to her husband, and she safeguards his earnings. And how is a woman capable at her work? Here, Visakha, she is skillful and diligent in regard to her husband's household chores. Whether with wool or cotton, she investigates the appropriate means and is able to act and arrange everything properly. In this way, a woman is capable at her work. And how is a woman one who manages the domestic help? Here, Visakha, in regard to her husband's domestic helpers, slaves, servants, or workers, she knows by direct inspection what they have done and failed to do. She knows when they are sick and healthy, and she distributes to each the appropriate share of food. In this way, a woman manages the domestic help. And how does a woman behave in a way that is agreeable to her husband? Here, Visakha, a woman would not commit any misdeed that her husband would consider disagreeable, even at the cost of her life. In this way, a woman behaves in a way that is agreeable to her husband. And how does a woman safeguard her husband's earnings? Here, Visakha, whatever her husband brings home, whether money or grain, silver or gold, she succeeds in protecting and guarding it, and she is not a spendthrift, thief, wastrel, or squanderer of his wealth. In this way, a woman safeguards her husband's earnings. When, Visakha, a woman possesses these four qualities, she is heading for victory in the present world and is successful in this world. But when she possesses four other qualities, she is heading for victory in the other world and is successful in regard to the other world. What for? Here, Visakha, a woman is accomplished in faith, moral discipline, generosity, and wisdom. And how is a woman accomplished in faith? Here, Visakha, a woman has faith. She places faith in the enlightenment of the Tathagata thus. So the Blessed One is an Arahant, as in text 4:3. Teacher of Devas and humans, the Enlightened One, the Blessed One. In this way, a woman is accomplished in faith. And how is a woman accomplished in moral discipline? Here, Visakha, a woman who abstains from the destruction of life, from stealing, from sexual misconduct, from false speech, and from wines, liquors, and intoxicants, the basis for negligence. In this way, a woman is accomplished in moral discipline. And how is a woman accomplished in generosity? Here, Visakha, a woman dwells at home with a mind devoid of the stain of stinginess, freely generous, open-handed, delighting in relinquishment, one devoted to charity, delighting in giving and sharing. In this way, a woman is accomplished in generosity. And how is a woman accomplished in wisdom? Here, Visakha, a woman possesses the wisdom that sees into the arising and passing away of phenomena, that is noble and penetrative, and leads to the complete destruction of suffering. When a woman possesses these four qualities, she is heading for victory in the other world, and is successful in regard to the other world. Anguttara Nikaya 8:49, 4, 269 through 271. Part 6. The Community. Verse 1. Six Roots of Dispute. 6. There are, Ananda, these six roots of disputes, What six? Here, Ananda, a monk is angry and resentful. Such a monk dwells without respect and deference toward the teacher, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, and he does not fulfill the training. A monk who dwells without respect and deference toward the teacher, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, and who does not fulfill the training, creates a dispute in the Sangha, which would be for the harm and unhappiness of many, for the loss, harm, and suffering of devas and humans. Now, if you see any such root of dispute, either in yourselves or externally, you should strive to abandon that same evil root of dispute. And if you do not see any such root of dispute, either in yourselves or externally, you should practice in such a way that that same evil root of dispute does not erupt in the future. Thus, there is the abandoning of that evil root of dispute. Thus, there is the non-eruption of that evil root of dispute in the future. 7 through 11. Again, a monk is contemptuous and insolent, envious and niggardly, deceitful and fraudulent, has evil wishes and wrong view, adheres to his own views, holds on to them tenaciously, and relinquishes them with difficulty. Such a monk dwells without respect and deference toward the teacher, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, and he does not fulfill the training. A monk who dwells without respect and deference toward the teacher, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, and who does not fulfill the training, creates a dispute in the Sangha, which would be for the harm and unhappiness of many, for the loss, harm, and suffering of devas and humans. Now, if you see any such root of dispute either in yourselves or externally, you should strive to abandon that same evil root of dispute. And if you do not see any such root of dispute either in yourselves or externally, you should practice in such a way that that same evil root of dispute does not erupt in the future. Thus, there is the abandoning of that evil root of dispute. Thus, there is the non-eruption of that evil root of dispute in the future. These are the six roots of dispute. From Majjhima Nikaya 104, Samagama Sutta 2, 245 through 247. Verse 2. Six Principles of Cordiality. 21. Ananda, there are six principles of cordiality that create love and respect, and conduce to cohesion, non-dispute, concord, and unity. What are the six? Here a monk maintains bodily acts of loving kindness both in public and in private toward his companions in the holy life. This is a principle of cordiality that creates love and respect, and conduces to cohesion, non-dispute, concord, and unity. Again, a monk maintains verbal acts of loving kindness both in public and in private toward his companions in the holy life. This too is a principle of cordiality that creates love and respect and conduces to unity. Again, a monk maintains mental acts of loving kindness both in public and in private toward his companions in the holy life. This too is a principle of cordiality that creates love and respect and conduces to unity. Again, a monk enjoys things in common with his virtuous companions in the holy life. Without making reservations, he shares with them any righteous gain that has been obtained in a righteous way, including even the mere content of his alms bowl. This too is a principle of cordiality that creates love and respect and conduces to unity. Again, a monk dwells both in public and in private, possessing in common with his companions in the holy life those virtues that are unbroken, untorn, unblemished, unmuddled, freeing, praised by the wise, ungrasped, leading to concentration. This too is a principle of cordiality that creates love and respect and conduces to unity. Again, a monk dwells both in public and in private, possessing in common with his companions in the holy life that view that is noble and emancipating, and leads the one who practices in accordance with it to the complete destruction of suffering. This too is a principle of cordiality that creates love and respect, and conduces to cohesion, to non-dispute, to concord, and to unity. These are the six principles of cordiality that create love and respect, and conduce to cohesion, to non-dispute, to concord, and to unity. From Majjhima Nikaya, 104. Samagama Sutta, 2. 250 through 251. Verse 3. Purification is for all four castes. 1. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's park. 2. Now at that time, 500 Brahmins from diverse provinces were staying at Savatthi for some business or other. Then those Brahmins thought, this ascetic Gotama describes purification for all the four castes. Who is there able to dispute with him about this assertion? 3. Now on that occasion, a Brahmin student named Asalayana was staying at Savatthi. Young, shaven-headed, 16 years old, he was a master of the three Vedas with their vocabularies, liturgy, phonology, and etymology, and the histories as a fifth. Skilled in philology and grammar, he was fully versed in natural philosophy and in the marks of a great man. So the Brahmins thought he would be able to debate with the Blessed One. 4. They went to the Brahmin student Asalayana and said to him, Master Asalayana, this ascetic Gotama describes purification for all the four castes. Let Master Asalayana come and dispute with the ascetic Gotama about this assertion. When this was said, the Brahmin student Asalayana replied, Sirs, the ascetic Gotama is one who speaks the Dhamma. Now those who speak the Dhamma are difficult to dispute with. I cannot dispute with the ascetic Gotama about this assertion. A second time and a third time the Brahmins urged him to go. A second time the Brahmin student Asalayana refused, but after the third urging he consented. 5. The Brahmin student Asalayana went with a large number of Brahmins to the Blessed One and exchanged greetings with him. When this courteous and amiable talk was finished, he sat down at one side and said to the Blessed One, Master Gotama, the Brahmins say thus, Brahmins are the highest caste. Those of any other caste are inferior. Brahmins are the fairest caste. Those of any other caste are dark. Only Brahmins are purified, not non-Brahmins. Brahmins alone are the sons of Brahma, the offspring of Brahma, born of his mouth, born of Brahma, created by Brahma, heirs of Brahma. What does Master Gotama say about that? Now, Asalayana, the Brahmin women are seen having their periods, becoming pregnant, giving birth, and nursing. And yet those Brahmins, though born from the womb, say thus, Brahmins are the highest caste. Brahmins alone are the sons of Brahma, the offspring of Brahma, born of his mouth, born of Brahma, created by Brahma, heirs of Brahma. 6. Although Master Gotama says this, still the Brahmins think thus, Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma. What do you think, Asalayana? Have you heard that in Yona and Cambodia and in other outland countries there are only two castes, masters and slaves, and that masters become slaves and slaves become masters? So I have heard, sir. Then on the strength of what argument or with the support of what authority do the Brahmins in this case say thus, Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma. 7. Although Master Gotama says this, still the Brahmins think thus, Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma. What do you think, Asalayana? Suppose a Kshatriya were to kill living beings, take what is not given, commit sexual misconduct, speak falsely, speak maliciously, speak harshly, gossip, be covetous, have a mind of ill will, and hold wrong view. With the breakup of the body, after death, would only he be reborn in a state of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell, and not a Brahmin? Suppose a merchant, a worker, were to kill living beings and hold wrong view. With the breakup of the body, after death, would only he be reborn in a state of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell, and not a Brahmin? No, Master Gotama. Whether it be a Kshatriya or a Brahmin, or a merchant or a worker, those of all four castes who kill living beings and hold wrong view, with the breakup of the body after death would be reborn in a state of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell. Then, on the strength of what argument, or with the support of what authority, do the Brahmins in this case say thus, Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma? 8. Although Master Gotama says this, still the Brahmins think thus, Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma. What do you think, Asalayana? Suppose a Brahmin were to abstain from killing living beings, from taking what is not given, from sexual misconduct, from false speech, from malicious speech, from harsh speech, and from gossip, and were to be without covetousness, to have a mind without ill will, and to hold right view. With the breakup of the body after death, would only he be reborn in a good destination, in the heavenly world, and not a Khatiya, or a merchant, or a worker? No, Master Gotama, whether a Khatiya, a Brahmin, a merchant, or a worker, those of all four castes who abstain from killing living beings and hold right view, with the breakup of the body after death, will be reborn in a good destination, in the heavenly world. Then, on the strength of what argument, or with the support of what authority, do the Brahmins in this case say thus, Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma? 9. Although Master Gotama says this, still the Brahmins think thus, Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma. What do you think, Asalayana? Is only a Brahmin capable of developing a mind of loving kindness toward this region, without hostility and without ill will, and not a Khatiya, or a merchant, or a worker? No, Master Gotama. Whether a Khatiya, a Brahmin, a merchant, or a worker, those of all four castes are capable of developing a mind of loving kindness toward this region, without hostility and without ill will. Then on the strength of what argument, or with the support of what authority, do the Brahmins in this case say thus, Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma? 10. Although Master Gotama says this, still the Brahmins think thus, Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma. What do you think, Asalayana? Is only a Brahmin capable of taking a bathing brush and bath powder, going to the river, and washing off dust and dirt, and not a Khatiya, or a merchant, or a worker? No, Master Gotama, whether a Khatiya, a Brahmin, a merchant, or a worker, those of all four castes are capable of taking a bathing brush and bath powder, going to the river and washing off dust and dirt. Then on the strength of what argument, or with the support of what authority, do the Brahmins in this case say thus, Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma? 11. Although Master Gotama says this, still the Brahmins think thus, Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma. What do you think, Asalayana? Suppose a consecrated Khatiya king were to assemble here 100 men of different birth, and say to them, Come, sirs, let any here who have been born into a Khatiya clan, or a Brahmin clan, or a royal clan, take an upper fire stick of fine quality wood, and light a fire and produce heat. And also, let any who have been born into an outcast clan, a trapper clan, a wicker worker's clan, a cartwright's clan, or a scavenger's clan, take an upper fire stick made from a dog's drinking trough, from a pig's trough, from a dustbin, or from castor oil wood, and light a fire and produce heat. What do you think, Asalayana? When a fire is lit and heat is produced by someone in the first group, would that fire have a flame, a color and radiance? And would it be possible to use it for the purposes of fire? While when a fire is lit and heat is produced by someone of the second group, that fire would have no flame, no color, and no radiance, and it would not be possible to use it for the purposes of fire? No, Master Gotama. When a fire is lit and heat is produced by someone of the first group, that fire would have a flame, a color, and radiance, and it would be possible to use it for the purposes of fire. And when a fire is lit and heat is produced by someone of the second group, that fire too would have a flame, a color, and radiance, and it would be possible to use it for the purposes of fire. For all fire has a flame, a color, and a radiance, and it is possible to use all fire for the purposes of fire. Then on the strength of what argument, or with the support of what authority, do the Brahmins in this case say thus, Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma? 12. Although Master Gotama says this, still the Brahmins think thus. Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma. What do you think, Asalayana? Suppose a Kshatriya youth were to unite with a Brahmin girl, and a son was born from their union. Should a son born from a Kshatriya youth and a Brahmin girl be called a Kshatriya after the father, or a Brahmin after the mother? He could be called both, Master Gotama. 13. What do you think, Asalayana? Suppose a Brahmin youth here were to unite with a Kshatriya girl, and a son were to be born from their union. Should the son born from a Brahmin youth and a Kshatriya girl be called a Kshatriya after the mother, or a Brahmin after the father? He could be called both, Master Gotama. 14. What do you think, Asalayana? Suppose a mare were to be mated with a male donkey, and a foal were to be born as the result. Should the foal be called a horse after the mother, or a donkey after the father? It is a mule, Master Gotama, since it does not belong to either kind. I see the difference in this last case, but I see no difference in either of the former cases. 15. What do you think, Asalayana? Suppose there were two Brahmin students who were brothers, born of the same mother, one studious and intelligent, and one neither studious nor intelligent. Which of them would Brahmins feed first at a funeral feast, or at a ceremonial offering, or at a sacrificial feast, or at a feast for guests? On such occasions, Brahmins would feed first the one who was studious and intelligent, Master Gotama, for how could what is given to one who is neither studious nor intelligent bring great fruit? 16. What do you think, Asalayana? Suppose there were two Brahmin students who are brothers, born of the same mother, one studious and intelligent, but immoral and of bad character, and one neither studious nor intelligent, but virtuous and of good character. Which of them would Brahmins feed first at a funeral feast, or at a ceremonial offering, or at a sacrificial feast, or at a feast for guests? On such occasions, Brahmins would feed first the one who was neither studious nor intelligent, but virtuous and of good character, Master Gotama. For how could what is given to one who is immoral and of bad character bring great fruit? 17. First, Asalayana, you took your stand on birth. And after that, you took your stand on scriptural learning. And after that, you have come to take your stand on the very ground that purification is for all four castes, as I describe it. When this was said, the Brahmin student Asalayana sat silent and dismayed, his shoulders drooping and head down, glum and without response. Majjhima Nikaya 93. Asalayana Sutta. Abridged. 2. 147 through 54. Verse 4. Seven Principles of Social Stability. 1.1. Thus have I heard. Once the Blessed One was staying at Rajagaha, on Mount Vulture Peak. Now, just then, King Ajatasattu Vahediputta of Magadha wanted to attack the Vajjayans. He said, I will strike the Vajjayans who are so powerful and strong. I will cut them off and destroy them. I will bring them to ruin and destruction. 1.2. And King Ajatasattu said to his chief minister, the Brahmin Vasakara, Brahmin, go to the Blessed One. Worship him with your head to his feet in my name. Ask if he is free from sickness or disease, if he is living at ease, vigorously and comfortably, and then say, Lord, King Ajatasattu Vadehiputta of Magadha wishes to attack the Vajjayans and says, I will strike the Vajjayans. Bring them to ruin and destruction. And whatever the Blessed One declares to you, report that faithfully back to me. For Tathagatas never lie. 1.3. Very good, sire, said Vasakara. And having had the state carriages harnessed, he mounted one of them and drove in state from Rajagaha to Vulture's Peak, riding as far as the ground would allow, then continuing on foot to where the Blessed One was. He exchanged courtesies with the Blessed One, then sat down to one side and delivered the king's message. 1.4. Now the Venerable Ananda was standing behind the Blessed One, fanning him, and the Blessed One said, 1. Ananda, Have you heard that the Vajians hold regular and frequent assemblies?
I have heard, venerable sir, that they do.
Ananda, as long as the Vajians hold regular and frequent assembly, they may be expected to prosper and not decline. 2. Have you heard that the Vajians meet in harmony, break up in harmony, and carry on their business in harmony?
I have heard, venerable sir, that they do.
Ananda, as long as the Vajians meet in harmony, break up in harmony, and carry on their business in harmony, they may be expected to prosper and not decline. 3. Have you heard that the Vajians do not authorize what has not been authorized already, and do not abolish what has been authorized, but proceed according to what has been authorized by their ancient tradition?
I have, venerable sir.
4. Have you heard that they honor, respect, revere, and salute the elders among them, and consider them worth listening to? 5. That they do not forcibly abduct others' wives and daughters and compel them to live with them? 6. That they honor, respect, revere, and salute the Vajrayan shrines at home and abroad, not withdrawing the proper support made and given before? 7. That proper provision is made for the safety of arahants, so that such arahants may come in future to live there, and those already there may dwell in comfort?
I have, Lord.
Ananda, so long as such proper provision is made, the Vajrayans may be expected to prosper and not decline. 1.5. Then the Lord said to the Brahmin Vasakara, "Once, Brahmin, when I was at the Sarandada shrine in Vesali, I taught the Vajrayans these 7 principles for preventing decline, and as long as they keep to these 7 principles, as long as these principles remain in force, the Vajrayans may be expected to prosper and not decline." At this, Vasakara replied, "Master Gotama, if the Vajrayans keep to even one of these principles, they may be expected to prosper and not decline, far less all 7. Certainly, the Vajrayans will never be conquered by King Ajatasattu by force of arms, but only by means of propaganda and setting them against one another. And now, Master Gotama, I must depart. I am busy and have much to do." "Brahmin, do as you think fit." Then Vasakara, rejoicing and delighted at the Blessed One's words, rose from his seat and departed. 1.6. Soon after Vasakara had gone, the Blessed One said, "Ananda, go to whatever monks there are living around Rajagaha and summon them to the assembly hall."
"Yes, venerable sir," said Ananda,
and he did so. Then he came to the Blessed One, saluted him, stood to one side and said, "Venerable sir, the Sangha of monks is assembled. Now is the time for the Blessed One to do as he sees fit." Then the Blessed One rose from his seat, went to the assembly hall, sat down on the prepared seat and said, "Monks, I will teach you 7 things that are conducive to welfare. Listen, pay careful attention, and I will speak." "Yes, venerable sir," said the monks, and the Blessed One said, "As long as the monks hold regular and frequent assemblies, they may be expected to prosper and not decline. As long as they meet in harmony, break up in harmony, and carry on their business in harmony, they may be expected to prosper and not decline. As long as they do not authorize what has not been authorized already, and do not abolish what has been authorized, but proceed according to what has been authorized by the rules of training, as long as they honor, respect, revere and salute the elders of long standing who are long ordained, fathers and leaders of the order, as long as they do not fall prey to the craving that arises in them and leads to rebirth, as long as they are devoted to forest lodgings, as long as they preserve their mindfulness regarding the body, so that in future the good among their companions will come to them, and those who have already come will feel at ease with them. As long as the monks hold to these 7 things, and are seen to do so, they may be expected to prosper and not decline." From Digha Nikaya 16. Mahaparinibbana Sutta 2. 72 through 77. Verse 5. The Wheel-Turning Monarch. 3. And after many hundreds and thousands of years, King Dalanemi said to a certain man, "My good man,
Whenever you see that the sacred wheel treasure has slipped from its position, report it to me.
Yes, sire, the man replied.
And after many hundreds and thousands of years, the man saw that the sacred wheel treasure had slipped from its position. Seeing this, he reported the fact to the king. Then King Dalhanemi sent for his oldest son, the crown prince, and said, My son, the sacred wheel treasure has slipped from its position, and I have heard say that when this happens to a wheel-turning monarch, he has not much longer to live. I have had my fill of human pleasures. Now is the time to seek heavenly pleasures. You, my son, take over control of this land. I will shave off my hair and beard, put on ochre robes, and go forth from the household life into homelessness. And having installed his eldest son in due form as king, King Dalhanemi shaved off his hair and beard, put on ochre robes, and went forth from the household life into homelessness. And 7 days after the royal sage had gone forth, the sacred wheel treasure vanished.
4. Then a certain man came to the consecrated Khatiya king and said, Sire, you should know that the sacred wheel treasure has disappeared. At this, the king was grieved and felt sad. He went to the royal sage and told him the news, and the royal sage said to him, My son, you should not grieve or feel sad at the disappearance of the wheel treasure. The wheel treasure is not an heirloom from your fathers, but now, my son, you must turn yourself into a noble wheel turner. And then it may come about that, if you perform the duties of a noble wheel-turning monarch, on the Uposatha day of the 15th, when you have washed your head and gone up to the veranda on top of your palace for the Uposatha day, the sacred wheel treasure will appear to you, thousand-spoked, complete with rim, hub, and all accessories.
5. But what, sire, is the duty of a noble wheel-turning monarch?
It is this, my son, yourself depending on the Dhamma, honoring it, revering it, cherishing it, doing homage to it, and venerating it, having the Dhamma as your badge and banner, acknowledging the Dhamma as your master. You should establish righteous guard, ward, and protection for your own household, your troops, your khatiyas and vassals, for Brahmins and householders, town and country folk, ascetics and Brahmins, for beasts and birds. Let no crime prevail in your kingdom, and to those who are in need, give wealth. And whatever ascetics and Brahmins in your kingdom have renounced the life of sensual infatuation and are devoted to forbearance and gentleness, each one taming himself, each one calming himself, and each one striving for the end of craving, from time to time you should approach them and ask, What, venerable sirs, is wholesome and what is unwholesome? What is blameworthy and what is blameless? What is to be followed and what is not to be followed? What action will in the long run lead to harm and sorrow, and what to welfare and happiness? Having listened to them, you should avoid what is unwholesome and do what is wholesome. That, my son, is the duty of a noble wheel-turning monarch.
Yes, sire, said the king, and he performed the duties of a noble wheel-turning monarch. And as he did so, on the Uposatha day of the 15th, when he had washed his head and gone up to the veranda on top of his palace for the Uposatha day, the sacred wheel treasure appeared to him, thousand-spoked, complete with rim, hub, and all accessories. Then the king thought, I have heard that when a duly anointed Khatiya king sees such a wheel on the Uposatha day of the 15th, he will become a wheel-turning monarch. May I become such a monarch?
6.
Then, rising from his seat, covering one shoulder with his robe, the king took a gold vessel in his left hand, sprinkled the wheel with his right hand, and said, May the noble wheel treasure turn, may the noble wheel treasure conquer. The wheel turned to the east, and the king followed it with his fourfold army. And in whatever country the wheel stopped, the king took up residence with his fourfold army. And those who opposed him in the eastern region came and said, Come, your majesty, welcome, we are yours, your majesty. Rule us, your majesty. And the king said, Do not take life. Do not take what is not given. Do not commit sexual misconduct. Do not tell lies. Do not drink intoxicating drinks. Enjoy your possessions as before. And those who had opposed him in the eastern region became his subjects. 7. Then the wheel turned south, west, and north, as section 6. Then the wheel treasure, having conquered the lands from sea to sea, returned to the royal capital and stopped before the king's palace as he was trying a case, as if to adorn the royal palace. From Digha Nikaya 26, Kakkavati, Sihanada Sutta. 3, 59-63. Verse 6. Bringing tranquility to the land. 9. Sitting to one side, the Brahmin Kutadanta addressed the Blessed One. Master Gotama, I have heard that you understand how to conduct successfully the triple sacrifice with its 16 requisites. Now, I do not understand all this, but I want to make a big sacrifice. It would be good if Master Gotama would explain this to me. Then listen, Brahmin. Pay proper attention, and I will explain. Yes, sir, replied Kutadanta. And the Blessed One continued. 10. Brahmin, once upon a time, there was a king called Mahavijita. He was rich, of great wealth and resources, with an abundance of gold and silver, of possessions and requisites, of money and money's worth, with a full treasury and granary. And when King Mahavijita was reflecting in private, the thought came to him, I have acquired extensive wealth in human terms. I occupy a wide extent of land which I have conquered. Let me now make a great sacrifice that would be to my benefit and happiness for a long time. And calling his chaplain, he told him his thought. I want to make a great sacrifice. Instruct me, venerable sir, how this may be to my lasting benefit and happiness. 11. The chaplain replied, Your Majesty's country is beset by thieves. It is ravaged. Villages and towns are being destroyed. The countryside is infested with brigands. If Your Majesty were to tax this region, that would be the wrong thing to do. Suppose Your Majesty were to think, I will get rid of this plague of robbers by executions and imprisonment, or by confiscation, threats, and banishment. The plague would not be properly ended. Those who survived would later harm Your Majesty's realm. However, with this plan, you can completely eliminate the plague. To those in the kingdom who are engaged in cultivating crops and raising cattle, let Your Majesty distribute grain and fodder. To those in trade, give capital. To those in government service, assign proper living wages. Then those people, being intent on their own occupations, will not harm the kingdom. Your Majesty's revenues will be great. The land will be tranquil and not beset by thieves. And the people, with joy in their hearts, playing with their children, will dwell in open houses. And saying, so be it, the king accepted the chaplain's advice. He gave grain and fodder to those engaged in cultivating crops and raising cattle, capital to those in trade, proper living wages to those in government service. Then those people, being intent on their own occupations, did not harm the kingdom. The king's revenues became great. The land was tranquil and not beset by thieves, and the people, with joy in their hearts, playing with their children, dwelled in open houses. From Digha Nikaya 5, Kutadanta Sutta 1, 134-136.